All right, welcome back to the Coast to Coast to Coast podcast. I am Chadley, I am your host, and I am joined here with two of the gang. We got Dale out on the East Coast here, and then up north, Chip is with us. Jim, unfortunately, couldn't make it in today, so you know what that means. It is Pump Up Denzel Ward Day. So we're gonna try to cover without him. We got our resident Pittsburgh analyst Dale with us, so we should be able to flow through pretty nicely. It is going to be a rough one today. I think it's going to be, I mean, to me, you know, I'll get to you guys, but to me, this is probably the most disappointing of our games so far, but we will battle through our rough feelings just one more time for the listeners. Today's topics are going to include, obviously, the game recap. If we get to it, some power rankings, only because the Browns took a pretty mean tumble this week. And then next week's matchup, and then some headlines around the league and some trade deadline stuff. If we have some time, we'll get to some game recaps, but no promises right now. The drinks for the day are whiskey drinks. So what were you guys able to muster up today?
Well, if it's close enough, I got, and I know it's early and everyone teases me, I got my brandy and nog going.
You got a brandy nog going already. Okay. You're going to be nogged out by Nog Day.
Yeah. I could push it to spring, buddy.
Okay. All right.
All right. Milk was a bad choice.
We're going to be straight up sitting there and like, yeah, welcome to the pre-draft podcast and the drink for the day. And Chip's just going to jump in. Nog. It's Nog.
Just some cinnamon spice.
And brandy.
What are you working with over there, Dale?
Just my normal bullet Manhattan. I usually make mine with the bullet rye if I'm going with bullet. If not, a couple other favorites, but bullet rye.
Yeah, that's a pretty classic.
So people
one.
Can
that's
hate
a,
me for
a favorite.
For using rye in a Manhattan.
I don't think that doesn't bother me at all. I like rye in a Manhattan.
It's just a lot stronger of a taste.
Yeah. Well, everybody's got their preference. I like to mix my bourbon and rye kind of around back and forth, but I was given
about a year ago a tip to make a perfect Manhattan, which I was unaware was an actual like name of a drink. I thought guy was just giving me a secret recipe. And you actually use dry and sweet vermouth in it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard of that.
It's terrible. Don't make that.
I was just going to say, I've heard of that. I don't know if I've ever had one.
That doesn't
it's
sound
just not
good. That's
good.
Just like add more additives and we'll call it a perfect Manhattan.
Yeah, what's just the flavor.
It?
The flavor was wrong.
Because
like
I found
it wasn't right.
I found while trying to make Manhattans that the less I added to my bourbon, the better it was. So I can't see how adding more to it makes it better.
The dry vermouth is just a very different flavor.
It's the wrong thing.
Yeah. Wrong is the right.
So the right word. I'm pretty sure. Not that we want to have the Manhattan bar back podcast, but I'm pretty sure Manhattans were started with rye, and I think somewhere along the way it changed to bourbon or something, because I see them with bourbon all the time now, but I learned it in bartending school as rye. I'm almost positive.
Take it.
And I am drinking a really weird whiskey drink. Actually, I'm having a whiskey sour, but a fermented whiskey sour, which is kind of cool. The kombucha place by me has gotten me super into drinking kombucha of all types. And there's this basically kombucha based, like it's basically a fermented sour mix. And then they add cherry and bitters. And then you just mix that with your whiskey and add your cherry and your egg wash if you want at the top, your egg foam. But it's pretty good. Nice. It's really tasty. It's got a little tiny fizz to it because it's fermented, but the flavor is perfect.
So, wow. Sounds good.
Yeah, it's nice. I'll see if I can get my hands on some for next time when you guys are around. All right. Well, let's depressingly move on to the next topic, the Browns Steelers game. well, the game recap was, it's the slowest game ever. And honestly, we could almost go through it drive by drive if we just skipped the drives where nothing really happened. Because for most of the game, that's exactly what happened. A lot of nothing. How did you guys feel watching that? I couldn't help but just be, I was almost just blank. We're at the Browns bar. We had a really good crowd. We had great prizes, good energy starting the game. They came out for that first drive. And as always, which we'll get to, it looked pretty good. And then flat for like the entire rest of the game.
Yeah, I mean, you start off with a almost 7-minute drive, and it's what you want to see. I mean, yeah, didn't end in a touchdown, but to control the ball like that, kind of move down the field, doing a little bit of everything. A lot of Nick Chubb on the board there, a little bit of Jarvis, but it's how you want to start the game, and I think this was mentioned earlier in the week. Those first drives always seem to go pretty well. So it is tough to start off on something encouraging, and then it just seems to kind of fall apart from there.
Yeah, so do you guys have a guess why we start so much better? It does make me curious about a past topic that Chip had brought up about who's calling the plays. And this is obviously just a theory because I don't know the details behind the scenes. But in a pretty traditional situation – when your head coach is the play caller, and this happened in other Brown situations and for a lot of other teams, when your head coach is the play caller, a lot of times your offensive coordinator's job is to, you know, coordinate with the coaches to help create a game plan, but also to put together the game script for 2-minute drives, opening drives, and other situational football. And I don't know for sure if I can say that that's happening here, but it does make you wonder if somebody like Alex Van Pelt is part of putting together initial game script and he's putting together something different than Stefanski's continuing with after the game. So I don't want to like just go anti-Stefanski play calling, but do you guys think that's a possibility?
Yeah, I think I would agree with everything you said there. And you're right. We do come out hot. It looks like when we have time, when we're relaxed, when Stefanski's relaxed, we look great. We're aggressive and we execute plays. But when the pressure's on and it's late in the second quarter or late in the game, or it just looks like the wheels start falling off and he looks desperate.
Yeah, we looked pretty good in the Chargers game. We've looked okay in some other games, including the Chiefs. My only competing theory is like, the team looks good when they're not behind or not like right, just dragging with another team. I don't know.
I mean, that does make sense. I mean, a lot of teams kind of get in and out of games depending on game script, right? We're a run first team. And when it's kind of neutral score, neutral game, we get to pick how we play, how often we run, how often we pass. We get to dictate all of that. But if we're getting behind in a game, that kind of goes out the window. And you never know really who's doing the design of those initial, like the first 15 and all of that stuff between the two, combination of both. But Chip, as you said, yeah, as things kind of get going, regardless of who it is, I don't know. And it, honestly, it doesn't really matter, but like, it doesn't seem like we're doing a good enough job correcting and making it like in-game adjustments. It just doesn't seem to be happening. And
right.
Maybe some of that's game script dependent. Look, we got to throw everyone who can either throw the ball or catch the ball's hurt. It could be a number of things, but it doesn't look like I'm seeing the game script adjustments.
Well, and I know Stefanski wants to control the game and the clock through the run, but certain situations like this week against Pittsburgh, who is just so good at stopping the run, you got to be able to just say, okay, we got to change it up.
Yeah, and it's not only that Pittsburgh's great at stopping the run, it's that Pittsburgh's great at stopping the run, and you've got a running back who you're featuring coming back off a calf injury who missed the last two games. So, you know, we've talked about this before with injuries. I know he's back, but he's not better. He's not 100%. He's just good enough to play. I mean, these guys that are all-stars like this, they come back on the field when they're maybe 70% sometimes because they're that good and you just need to get them back out there.
It looked like he did break off one run. I can't remember exactly when it was. And then it came back on a holding call. And I was pretty disappointed to see that.
Oh, yeah. So there was two. The one you're talking about was later in the game. The first, he came out with that really early run that basically broke open the first and only scoring drive of the first quarter. And then he did have another one where he just burst through for maybe 10, 15 yards, and it ended up coming back. And that's a rough one. By the way, that was no joke, that scoring drive. Dale's boy, McLaughlin, 3 points, making him, I think, 11 for 12 so far this season on field goals, which is a mini bright spot because, I mean, it's feeling like we might have a pretty steady kicker going here, but it's pretty
and
sad.
He's,
that
he's perfect on extra points this year, yeah. 18 for 18. And
really? Okay.
He's 18 for 18 in career, yep. 49 to 50. He's only missed one extra point.
And
which
that's good
unfortunately
for us
just doomed us next week, but
yeah, but that's good for us because I almost feel like these kickers, like, they're all going to miss a couple field goals here and there, but where we struggled for the last maybe 3 or 4 years is we kept having kickers that were flopping on the extra points. So to have a guy that is 5 years in his career or 3 years in his career, mm-hmm. and isn't missing the extra
and
points, at least you know.
I don't care how many hits, I still hold my breath every time he lines up the kick.
It's stuck in us now. I feel like we've been watching missed kicks forever.
It's not his fault.
Yeah, we've been watching guys flop extra points for like 3-4 years now, and it's been tough. Okay, so that's a mini bright spot. I'm going to be peeking for them throughout this podcast because there's not many. In the second quarter, the Steelers got down there. The Browns actually made a stand and kept them to a field goal, which I thought, man, okay, that's a good sign, man. We held them steady. We're at home. We're definitely the better team. We didn't play well in the first quarter, and now we can come out in the second half and make something happen, and we sort of did. I mean, we came out in the second half. We put together another scoring drive where Dearness Johnson had that almost like miraculous video game cut and scored a touchdown there, and it was looking like, okay, let's get rolling. So
yeah, and with their kicker out, I remember thinking all we have to do is match them score for score at this point because they're not going to get all their 2-point conversions, and they would look too scared to go for a kick.
Yeah, and it also told me like they're going for it on fourth down, which can be dangerous, but at the same time, if your defense can hold them, you can get the ball back with pretty good field position if they're around their, you know, 25, 35, 45 yard line, because they're not going to be able to kick at all.
And with Chris Boswell on the topic real quick, does anybody know about his status? Is he okay?
He was, I think he got a concussion actually.
They signed another kicker. They picked up Lambeau.
Yeah. I thought it was like a leg injury or something that he was limping around with, but somebody told me he ended up having a head injury. So, I mean, it was a dumb play and we didn't make him pay for it even hard enough, but it took their kicker out of the game and it should have gave us a bigger advantage.
I mean, it did. They only scored 15 points. You got to score more than 15.
We got lucky there, honestly, with that. Laura was talking about it. Like, they go for it on that play. He gets annihilated on an attempted trick play. So they are there. Then the next time down, they have to go for it. They were passing up on field goals and extra points going for twos. Like the game could have actually been out of hand a little earlier.
They held
based
up
on that. But
I mean, it was, I think this was one of those, I mean, if you have that definition of a bend don't break defense, that's kind of what we got to see today. I mean, that's pretty much what they did.
That one touchdown
yards and first downs, but they didn't let up many points.
That one Pittsburgh touchdown, what's his name, Pat, I'm gonna screw up his last Fireman's name. It's like, okay, dude, did you see that? He like juggled it and caught it the last second. That was a good
I could not believe he got his feet down on that. I was like, no, he was out. He was out.
Yeah.
Am I right on that one? I think that was on Harrison, but I think Harrison had pretty good coverage. And I think he got his hands on the ball.
Yeah.
And when it popped up in the air, he's looking around. And
the coverage was great.
The move was to just, it should have just got him out of bounds.
He's a really good
player.
That's
easy.
That's
easy
for me.
He was looking for it.
A non-athlete to say.
Yeah, he should have popped it, and you're probably right. In retrospect, knock him out of bounds, and we can win that game. But, I mean, it was on fourth down, and it was definitely like he had great coverage and he got his hands on the ball. It's just it looked to me like he got his hands on it, and he was kind of turning, and then he, like, looked up for it. But Freiermuth was going for it.
Yeah, he pulled it down.
Somehow kept his feet in. I thought they were going to review it, and it wasn't going to be a catch, but –
That reminded me of a Gary Barnage catch. Remember Gary's old catches?
Yes. He always had a weird catch.
He never
like
just caught it.
Catch.
It was just a bobble. Flying around. Somehow he got it, and it was a catch.
Pins it between his forearm and his butt cheek as he falls sideways to the ground.
Right.
Well, there goes that drink. That was a quick
debate. That was a satisfying final sip.
Depressing topic, I guess. So along the way, I mean, we don't have to get in the details of the other scoring drive. Najee Harris had that couple-yard run for a touchdown. I felt like that was a big defensive breakdown, though, too, even though it was only on second down, and they probably would have got in. But there was four Browns there, like, kind of diving or making a play for it, and he just dove through all of them. It was almost like Malcolm Smith was, like, waiting for him to meet up with him. And you're on the one-yard line, man. You got to break free of your blocker and get to him first. But
yeah, I mean, in a league that favors offense so much, I'm not mad about 15 points. That's a good defensive game, in my opinion, no matter how much we break down mistakes by the defense. I'm more upset. I'm looking at that 10 points.
A lot of people were mad about it. And I'm with you right away that I said with some people at the bar, they said the defense like fell short and let go too many first downs, which is true. And let them score in crucial points, which is true. But if you go into a game against pretty much every team, especially Pittsburgh, and you say, and you can guarantee the Browns are only going to let up 15 points, I'm putting full salary down on the Browns every time.
Right. Same. Yeah. You know, 15 points. You're telling me all I had to do is do better than 15. Put me down.
Two touchdowns and a 2-point conversion any day. Yeah. I'll kick all field goals and beat them.
And they were 4-for-13 on thirds, which is not great, but man, it just felt watching it like they
it
were
just
making
crucial.
All
didn't
of those.
It feel well?
And,
you know what? What was
2-for-4 on fourths?
That's what I was gonna say. So what was their fourth down? Because I know they converted to fourth downs,
but still 50% on fourth down, and two of them were like 4th and 1 and 4th and 2, and you're gonna get those. You're always gonna get those if you have a nice veteran offense with a couple skill players and a running game. You know, that 500 from fourth down and short is sort of like, okay, kind of expected. I just think what people at the Browns backers bar were seeing that were mad about the defense, and what some other people I saw online saying stuff about the defense, and what made it look like Dale just described, it seemed so much worse than it was. It's because there was several crucial downs where you thought the Browns could take either control of the game or get the win with a stop at this point, and that's where they didn't get it. And so it felt like even though they were making some stops, the ones they weren't making were so important that it just seems like they were blowing it.
And we had some, penalties on thirds as well. That just, it didn't help. I know we're still the most penalized team in the league, but we actually did better. So that was a little bit of a silver lining.
Yeah, it's surprising to me because I feel like we were so well coached last year on that weird short COVID year, and we really fixed up the penalties. Our penalties this year are constantly on linemen and receivers. I'm not even going to be mad about the defensive ones because most of those are bullshit. It, just so many times that it's hard to even like decide what's real. But on the offense, it's like constantly guys, receivers lined up. How many times have we had like an illegal formation or a receiver false start? Like what? How is that happening?
I mean, it ended the game, but
yeah. Took us back on a really tough, crucial third down.
They owe Garrett a large handful of holding calls. So
yeah, I'll take more, please. So how did you guys feel about the running back usage? I thought they probably were a little bit overusing Chubb in the run. And after Dearness Johnson's, this is what I thought during the game, Dearness Johnson's big game last week. But then I kind of saw like the PFF scoring and some of the actual stats of their rushing from the game. And I was like, wow, okay. So Dearness Johnson wasn't that great. And I could see why they would kind of lean off of him, but rushing wise, I would have used him more with Chubb just getting back. But I don't think they overused Chubb. I just think, you know, kind of a little bit bigger mix might have been better this one week.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Chubb.
I was just going to say, I would like to see Felton a little bit more. I only see him do like maybe one carry a game in really rare scenarios. I don't know. Is he not being used as a running back at all?
I still think he's a receiver. I still think he's our like backup slot receiver. I think that's
okay. So he's just not a running back. But he's not bad when he takes carries. I thought he looks good.
He seems like the emergency running back. Like we have Chubb. He's an all-star. We have Hunt. He's an all-star. We have now Dearness Johnson. We've seen put up like some great numbers. I think they're thinking Dimitri Felton is like he could have a future as either they've been practicing him mostly at receiver.
Yeah.
Even though he's listed as a running back or he's a pass catcher of one way or another. I just think they want to develop him in that role because we're going to have running backs going forward.
So that being said, Felton had one carry, Johnson had four. So outside
of four for 22 yards though.
That's where my
carrying over 5 yards a carry. Just like last week.
I think my big issue is just the total volume. The split still does seem off on the 4-16. So I agree there, but we were still moving the ball. We're still getting like good average yards.
Chubb was okay. He'd be coming off the inner injury. He was still pretty decent, just not himself.
Dearness had so many of those explosive plays the week prior, like that he just every play that looked like it was dead ended up at 4 or 5 yards. And I know the Steelers front is one of the best in the league, so that's a little different, but it is surprising to not just give him that opportunity. Like is handing the ball to Dearness worse than a 4 yard curl to Jarvis, like hitting him in the hands being swarmed by linebackers? Like
I think I said before the game, I mean, the Steelers are a really tough defensive front and they're tough against the run pretty much traditionally, but I still think when you have the line that you have and you have the two guys back there running the ball that you have, you just try to make it work a little bit and just, you know, hope for the best. But I don't know. I'm not going to blame it on that. I understand why I heard they were, you know, just stacking the box, basically daring them to throw, which brings us to our next big point. They basically dared Baker to beat them and he didn't. And the bar was very split on whose fault that was. Where do you guys stand? Because I don't think this may be one of those things that there's not a wrong answer to, but it's just your kind of your perception. But where were you guys on? I mean, Baker versus the receivers, neither of them probably played well enough to win. But if you're putting it a little bit on one or the other, who you lean in towards?
I know this is not a popular take because there's a lot of people defending Baker right now, but I'm putting a lot of blame on Baker. The cameras follow the ball, but what you're not seeing on the other side of the field is how many guys are wide open. And I've watched a lot of like clips where I can to see same clips everyone else is seeing on social media or whatever. But there was the one play I remember when Odell, it just felt like he was force feeding Jarvis at the end of the game. And I remember it was like, what's his name? And Njoku was wide open in the 20, for any if all he did was throw in his direction, that would have been a touchdown.
Oh my God, I know exactly what play you're talking about, and you could see it on that one because where Baker was like rolling, the camera could catch that, and Njoku was just wide open.
Right, and it's not even. I'm not trying to narrow it down to one play because I don't think games are always. No, but
that's a big one.
Yeah, that is a big one, but my point is something's going on there with Baker where he's just not finding the open guys. It's like he looks at his first read and tries to force it, man. Or I just don't know if Baker's the answer. And I go back to talking about bringing in a quarterback like Watson or something. You keep Odell here in that scenario and watch the sparks fly, and the offense probably would just ignite and have no trouble moving. But there's something about Baker. He's just like, I don't know, man. I feel like he's not, you know, 2 minutes – warning, he always fails us. You know, he's trying to force stuff that's not there. I don't know. I mean, I'm no expert. I'm just telling you what I see.
Yeah. I was trying to – I think at first I was putting it more on the receivers just because when it came down to it late in the game, that's where you just saw people getting hit in the hands and just one after another just dropping – balls that were thrown to him, whether they were high. There was a couple that were not good passes by Baker. Like they were hospital balls, but like they just looked scared. Like they, like a couple guys just were like, no, I want no. Like they made business decisions and like, okay, like Baker needs to put the ball more on him. But if we want shots at the game, like people can't be pulling their arms down early. Like, sorry, you can't.
Yeah,
and so. the other thing that really stuck out, not to kind of to take it off, but between those two was late in the game. I mean, and Chip, I think it ties a little to your point. Like he was taking a three-step drop or whatever it was and just immediately having to fire the ball because he was just surrounded. And so I don't think a lot of the last quarter – he was even getting chances to go through progressions. It was like he was picking his head up and he had to fire the ball. And the line really wasn't doing him any favors at the end of the game there when it really counted. The Steelers, they put the pressure on and we did not have an answer to that pressure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and they were putting the pressure on. All right, go ahead.
I was going to say, I thought, you know, in some of those situations, the answer was, you know, not having 20 carries total for the game and force them to ease the pressure to stop the run a little bit. But man, I'm kind of like torn between those two arguments because initially I thought Baker played a fairly good game given the circumstances. And I'm still a big kind of believer that part of the reason he's having so much trouble is that injury. So I'm just hoping for him to come out and find some rhythm and start to like find his confidence again. And having 7 dropped balls in one game is certainly – which spans every receiver. Jarvis dropped 2. Odell dropped 1. Dearness Johnson dropped 2. I'm trying to remember. Hooper may have dropped the most open one of all of them.
Oh, yeah.
And Hollywood Higgins dropped 1 or 2.
Hooper should have been a touchdown.
Yep. Yeah, and so when you're looking at that, and I agree with Chip, I think the big problem on Baker's shoulders right now is he's hesitating either so long that he's getting the ball out too late to somebody, or he's just not seeing the guys. And I'm just wondering how much of that is just a lack of confidence in making certain throws, which I guess he's going to have to fight and play through at this point, but I don't know when it comes for this particular game, as rough as Baker has been, especially after this injury, it seemed like he played one of his better games in the last few weeks, and 7 drop balls to me is just not an acceptable professional football.
Yeah.
Number.
To your point of drop balls though, real quick, Odell didn't drop one. He only got 1 target and went for about 6 yards.
I thought, yeah. So we were trying to figure that out. I swear Odell had a drop.
That might have been one of the previous weeks. He dropped a 4th down. I think it was 2 weeks ago or whatever. It was really upsetting. But, yeah, he didn't have any drops this week because he only had 1 attempt, and it was for 6 yards.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. I wrote down a little note, the ghost of Odell Beckham, because I was thinking about what we had talked about, how he still seemed – he had a really bad game last week. There's no getting around that. He had some drops. He also just got beat and had his worst PFF score. He wasn't he even slipped a couple times and missed a block. It's very much like rough week. Okay, it happens to everybody. Throughout most of the rest of this season, I think he's been playing better than his numbers and better than his criticism. And Baker just and also actually people have been talking for a while like this Baker, you know, and him have bad connection. Case Keenum came into the game and it didn't seem like, you know, all of a sudden Odell Beckham was getting, you know, superstar touches or play. It just there's something up with Odell in this offense somehow, but he seems open a lot in most games. And I for the life of me, I can't figure out what the heck to do to fix that problem.
That's a good point. I didn't really consider Case. He didn't really, you know, light up Odell either.
No, it's just there's something up with Odell in this offense. And again, it's not like you can say, oh, he's, you know, on a bad Raiders team and he's just not playing like Randy Moss, like that Randy Moss here where people are like, he's just not in it. He seems like he's in it. He seems like he's blocking. He seems like it's
another
open.
Thing with the he's open footage, you got to be careful at when that footage is being taken because sometimes the play falls on one side of the field. So, Beckham is open on the other side of the field.
I mean, that's why we have an 11-minute video from Odell's dad saying that Baker doesn't want him to shine.
Sometimes he's open that it's like you just launch it in the middle, and by the time some defender will get
it. Right, but is it open because Chubb was getting the ball or the screen was developing or what was going on otherwise that else caused him to get open? You know what I mean? So, I mean, I'm not taking anything away from Odell. He's getting open. I'm just saying sometimes those footage, when they're wide open, there's already a play developing and the defense knows it, so they're selling out.
Maybe. I don't know. It's hard to tell, but I definitely, like I said, I'll never feel the way I felt during that Rams game or that Chargers game at the stadium in LA where it just – you kept seeing him open and you're almost just yelling in your head, like, get it to Odell, and then Baker rolls out and tosses it, you know, 4 yards to somebody, and you're like, oh, my God, he was so open. But – I don't know. So I've had about enough of this game. It's pretty depressing. I did want to go over, we had talked about before the podcast started, Chip, going over a couple of these PFF grades. And if you guys had any, I was looking through them. And if you guys had any players you're curious about, let me know. I was just going to go over real quick, just a couple, position groups, that I thought were interesting. Number one, first of all, this was one of the Browns' lowest overall PFF games, according to John Costco, which is the lead PFF analyst. But it very much like sad to come out of a Steelers week where you're hoping everybody's pumped and they're really just fired up to have one of their best games and the Browns throw up. Before yesterday, the Browns were the fifth overall graded team in PFF, just counting special teams, offense and defense all just combined score. Browns were number 5. I don't know where they sit right now, but this was their by far worst performance with only a few bright spots. One obviously being Myles Garrett, who, although he didn't destroy the stat sheet, he ended the game with a 93, which might be one of, if not his best games ever. He apparently was beating his player so much that the left defensive end or the left offensive tackle for the Steelers got graded a 0. They said he didn't win on Myles Garrett for one snap for a positive play in this entire game. And most of the reason that Garrett didn't have like 5 snaps is because Ben Roethlisberger now gets the ball out of his hands between like 1.8 and 2 seconds.
So fast. He's done well at that this year with just and he takes his time now to warm up throughout the seasons, but he really does get the ball out quick.
Yeah. So good contract for that
guy. Chad, to your point that Pro Football Focus had us ranked at like number 5 before this week, I don't think the old eye test would give us the ranking of number 5. Not even our wins look pretty this year.
Yeah, but what the eye test doesn't show you is stuff like our offensive line is you know, was graded you know, even with the injuries we have offensive linemen that our starters, at least, are putting up great grades. It's the fact that they're all getting injured and coming out. That's bad. And I don't know. It's a collective average. You guys got a lot of teams with a lot more up and down, like a high and low end players. And
like you have the Rams they have like a bunch of top five players at their positions and guys who couldn't make most other teams, but
a lot of top heavy teams, but
I always like to throw the old eye test at Chad.
Yeah. When you're looking at rosters though, it's like, yeah, that would make sense. Like we all came to this season saying the Browns have kind of a top five roster. And you know, when the Browns lose like three games, or let's say at least two games, because two of the safeties are playing so bad that they let go like 65-yard touchdowns, well, the rest of the team's scoring pretty high, and you just blow the game by having one guy so freaking bad that he lets up a giant touchdown. So I don't know. It's been all over the place, but we've had some high scoring games with the defensive line, offensive line, receivers for a while. We're scoring way higher than our production. A big one that jumped out to me was Baker Mayfield. He scored a 72 today, which is really bad for him. His averages over the last few years, even Freddie Kitchen, were in like the 80s somewhere. And that's even when he was in 2019. He's not a 72 quarterback normally, which is why I'm convinced, you know, his shoulder is his biggest enemy right now. But that still is like coming off that injury thinking, will he even play or does he need surgery? I mean, that's a reasonable starter play, and it is much higher than any of our receivers. Here's our receiver scores in the last game in order. Schwartz 55 and Higgins tied for 55. Jarvis and Odell tied at 52. In case you out there are wondering, a 65 is a pretty decent average starter. A 60 is either a young starter who can still develop a bit or a starter who's getting older and ready to be replaced by somebody. 55 is like a mediocre backup score. Njoku came out strong with a 78 and Harrison Bryant had a 75, but Hooper pulled a 54. So that's your pass catchers. Your best scorers are Njoku and Bryant, who have a lot of the score they have since they weren't targeted a ton just because they were blocking well on passing and running plays to the other receivers and running backs. That is a rough thing to see on offense. Chubb was nowhere near himself. Demetric Felton, which we brought up before, scored a 67, which is not great for how he's been playing, but it makes you think it might be time to just scoot the old guys over for a couple reps and let this kid get in the game.
Hey, Chad, what about Blake Hance? How's he looking? He's going to be playing going forward, it sounds like.
Blake Hance was the lowest scoring player on our team with a 33. To give him a little credit, and by the way, so we talked about it. Let's just go over the recap. If you're like 90 to 100, you are a Hall of Fame level player. That is just elite, super level. Guys in the 80s are guys competing for all pros. Guys in the 70s are really good starters, and at some positions also might be competing for Pro Bowls. Guys in their 60s, especially upper 60s, are like mediocre level to like reasonable starters. And then again, 50s are like you are a backup level at best or a developmental guy. And anything under that means on that day you didn't belong on the field. You don't want to be in the 50s, the low 50s, the 40s, or the 30s. Jack Conklin, though, we know is a pretty decent player, and he only had about a 40 against TJ Watt. So I'm not going to kill Blake Hance because he's definitely a backup left guard. And he has no business playing tackle, but
Conklin was also injured, and
right.
Then
he's an injured right tackle playing maybe one of the best two or three pass rushers, if not the best in the game.
He lines up off sides and gets away with it.
Yeah, well then Conklin has to deal with that. Conklin has to deal with.
Chad, would you like to check in on his score for the day?
It's biased.
Give me a shot. Give me it. I'll take a look. Do you guys have anybody else you're thinking about? I know, just to tease me.
Honestly, I feel like I'm podcast. More intrigued to see how some of the Steelers did than the Browns.
Yeah, I mean, I can check
just
it out.
On some just some of the offensive There was just some interesting stats.
Wait, give me my weekly Mac Wilson.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say. I was going to say, just to tease me, I know that Chip is going to get into Mac Wilson. And I was disappointed at what I thought was Mac Wilson's coming out party last week when he scored like a 73, which that's a real life start NFL, like good starting score. And this week he comes out with a 53 and completely plummets back to earth. 53. That is a, you don't belong on an NFL. That's a special teamer or a mediocre backup score. And it's like, our cornerbacks played pretty well though. Newsom, the young kid is always edging the score around 70. Today he only had a 67, but I think he was covering Deontay Johnson most of the game, which is a tough task. And then I was also kind of happy to see that for the first time, our safeties came in with a trio of Delpadin, Johnson tied at 70 and Harrison at 62, which means all of our safeties for maybe the first time this season graded like they could start at safety in the NFL. Whoa. What an amazing outcome. Steelers. Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to peek on it. I'll look later for you. Dale, I can only see right now their combined score.
I'm not actually interested. I just wanted Chip to hear what the
I don't think it was great. I'll see what TJ wants. I can text him later.
Yeah.
That's fine.
All right. We better roll on from PFF. But is there anybody else you guys were curious about? Our line played fairly well.
I disagree.
Not a great game.
Is there a PFF score on Stefanski?
Yeah, I take it back. Okay. Our guards who are supposed to be there and are not injured played a decent game. Everybody else who's injured or is a backup on our line stunk today.
Everyone knows, the least important part of a line is continuity. So
yeah, and
whoever
the edges,
walked
you definitely
in
don't want
been
that
better.
You don't want the middle or the edges strong. You just want the two guys in between that have the most help to play solid.
Even if it's just one side, that's fine.
Yeah. One last PFF note. Our friend Malik Jackson came in with the second lowest score on the team at a 39.
Yeah.
Which marks the third week of this season where he scored under 40 or 40 or below. That is miserable.
I meant to ask you about him because I felt like he's just becoming a liability on this team anymore.
He got owned by a pretty sad offensive line. I don't know. It's pretty weak. You know, just overall, you know, guys played as starters. Our linebackers were starters. Our safeties were starters. Our cornerbacks were starters. Our starting guards were starters. And our defensive ends. And Clowney had a rough game, but our defensive ends and our pass rushers were starters. Everybody else should be ashamed of themselves and are going to get killed when we have to get to the film session here. Moving on from PFF, we'll take a little breather here. Did you guys happen to see the Browns power rankings?
No.
I popped them open, and the Browns, who have been, you know, even through the beginning of the season with a couple losses, we're sitting somewhere between like 5 and 10 this whole season. And this is, of course, we expect with the injuries and with how bad they've been playing, they were going to take a bit of a plummet, but man, they worked their way down today. Did you guys happen to see the link that I had sent at all? Because if you can, you'll have to pop it up. It kind of goes from 32 down, and it gives you how guys move. The Browns this week for the first time were, let's see, is it 17? Yeah, 17th overall. We are now in the bottom half of the entire NFL.
As we should be. That's how we looked.
Pretty rough to swallow, even with the injuries, because I thought a lot of guys were coming back this week and even playing banged up. I thought we were probably going to be able to beat the Steelers. I don't know if we picked sides this week, but I definitely would have picked the Browns. So 17th is kind of where we stand now, with a huge uphill climb going into next week's game against the Cincinnati Bengals, who I think we both would have picked to lose twice to the Browns before we watched the beginning of the season play out. Are you guys up or down on the Bengals following this week's debacle against New York?
Well, I was just hoping Jim would be here this week because we have our little bet going, and I need Denzel Ward to be healthy.
Yeah, if he's out, he kind of screws you, huh?
Yeah, I said we're going to hold him to four catches, 80 yards, and I'm taking the under, and Jim took the over. Just a little gentleman's bet there, and well, it'll probably turn out.
You should have just bet on Newsom and just said, regardless of the cornerback playing, and just at least it would have gave you a fighting chance.
Yeah, so. I mean, I basically said four catches, 80 yards, anybody, but I think that I think Ward has what it takes to
do that.
The only person Ward can be there. He's got the speed to match him. You know, he's in your face. He's lights tougher. Out when he's
Yeah, he's tough. He's too tough. Maybe why he keeps hurting himself.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't know how to be careful with his body.
What do you think? It's your boy Joe Burrow coming in this week. Where is this game? Are we in Cincinnati or are they in Cleveland?
I have to look that up.
I'm not quite sure. Man, I'm so glad to not be talking about the Steelers anymore. Oof.
As far as the Bengals Jets game, I mean, I want to put that – I didn't get to see much of it, but when you give up the second 400-yard passing game in a for someone's first career game in NFL history, that's not great. I almost feel like they just didn't know what to do. I mean, their defense has been playing so well. Read some really good articles just about how – what they were doing to disguise looks and confuse people. Orlovsky and Ryan Clark had a great like 3-4 minute clip breaking down some Bengals defense stuff. And Ryan Clark was like, I don't know what that is. He's like, I don't even know what they're doing right now. And it was working. And then to come out and, Mike White, which I assume everybody knows like one or two guys named Mike White. Like my dad had a buddy. I think I knew a guy.
I'm pretty sure that was the mayor of Cleveland when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
So. Yep. Nope. That happened. So yep. That's like three that I've met. Well, I haven't met him, but like, so everyone's got a guy like that, but it's, yeah, there was a lot of other weird games. So I don't know if it was just a weird week, or their coaches just did not have them prepared. They were not expecting him to come out and just sling the ball like that. I mean, they threw way more times than I would have expected.
Chip, so, you're unbiased on Mike White. Do you think this was just a defense not knowing, or do you think this may be the secret that the NFL
Want you to know? I'm hoping Mike White has another one in him this Thursday against the Colts because I got him on my fantasy team and I'm playing him.
And we are in Cincinnati.
Okay.
Against the Cincinnati Burrows.
Yeah.
Cincinnati Burrows. Oh, man. The game is frightening. I don't know. It's just how's the Bengals run defense? Because this, you know, you're definitely getting Chubb on another week back off of his injury. It looks pretty clear that if he's running the ball and not trying to actually use both of his hands to catch it, D'Ernest Johnson is still kind of a beastly runner. So are you going to be able to just control Burrow and the Bengals just by keeping the ball out of their hands?
I think if Miles can get hot, I mean, you know, and put the pressure on him, I don't think he's faced anybody like Myles Garrett yet this year.
Not this year, no. Unless you've played the Steelers, you probably haven't faced anybody like Myles Garrett this year. Does anybody else have a pass rusher to that level? You know, Chase Young is having a rougher year. Von Miller stinks now. You know, a lot of these great pass rushers that we're used to are not having the impact that they used to have. And right now it seems to me like those two really, really stand out in the crowd, even with guys like Joey Bosa, who we know is a great player and stuff. It feels like those two are on a kind of in a league of their own right now.
Yeah, and the Bengals defense has given up more touchdowns to quarterbacks passing than they have on the ground. So it'll be intriguing to see kind of what that looks like. Just looking through some of their touchdowns against, the rushes are all within like a yard or two, and the majority of their passes are 24, 12, 39, 19, 13. So they're from a little further away. Some maybe some yak there, but it looks like their pass defense has given up more than their rush has so far.
I know I've been very negative this week in our group text, not necessarily so much on this pod, but one thing I think gets lost is that we're 4-4. So if we win this game, you know, we're right back to a winning record.
And we're right back to competing for the division.
There are 9 games left. We haven't even hit – well, this is like the halfway point, I guess.
Halftime will be. We'll call this a halftime.
Yeah, halftime would technically be halfway point through. Yeah. So I think that kind of gets lost.
Chip, that's a really good point. Back to
it's all
just kind of tying that
right
back to Chad's article on us being ranked 17th. I mean, there's plenty of people ahead of us that I mean, it's kind of frustrating to see him there, and you wouldn't even expect it. I know
Steelers
I did before
are ahead
this
of us
season,
now.
But yeah, they're ahead of us. Which hey, they beat us. That's fine. But
well, they beat
us
with
the Patriots. No one expected. The Raiders, that's still kind of TBD.
That's a good point.
Saints,
you know what's really nice?
I mean,
about
what's
going to
happen with the Saints now?
Dale, you know what's really nice about a lot of the teams you've named? We play most of them.
Yeah.
We play the Steelers again. We play the Patriots. Do we play the Raiders? We play the Raiders too. We don't play the Saints, but like you just mentioned, well, you know, we'll see where they go. But the Steelers beat us head-to-head. You still can't convince me the Steelers are the better team than us this year. We are playing like we're like a three-wheeled Lamborghini right now. We're all show at the beginning of the season, and now we just don't have.
We should have won that game. But you know what hurts me more than that loss is that was probably Ben's last game in First Energy, and you let him walk away saying he got that W. Yeah. I wanted him so bad to go. Yeah, my last game in First Energy. You know, I lost.
You know what? It was really nice of him, though. I think I don't remember if it was pre or post game, for him to say that he was glad he was no longer the most winning quarterback in our stadium's history. So I think that was nice of him to call out.
Yeah, that's sad that was ever even a
so.
That was kind of a humble brag, though.
Yeah,
that was kind of like him saying,
totally fair,
like, "It's about time somebody."
It's about time Baker Mayfield won more games than me.
And he got one more. He just got one more win there. So,
yeah, he did. He got it. They earned it. They came out tougher than us. Yeah, it's close. Yeah. Oh, all right. Well, all right. Yeah, I think this may be one of those games where you really do have to have a really balanced attack, because like you said, they give up yards in the air. We're strongest on the ground. And I think this is a game where Baker's, you know, when I say we're playing short, I'm not giving an excuse of like they're hurt and so that's why they lost this week. I'm giving the justification that just because they lost this week at home doesn't mean they're not going to get better when they all get back, and the Steelers might be the ones banged up and we might go right into Pittsburgh and beat them to end the season instead. I'm not counting that out. I'm not counting the Browns out yet. But
the one thing we do need to worry about this week, it's Larry Ogunjobi revenge game.
Well, to make a joke on that, I said before the season, the last thing we had to worry about was a Schobert revenge game. And then he came out and pulled the ball out of Jarvis Landry's hands for the freaking win. And I was like, you have got to be kidding me. It was a joint effort. He was getting taken down by like 3 people. But the idea was, did Joe Schobert really have to be in that pile helping to cause that fumble? God Christ, that was disappointing. But well,
I mean,
on to the Bengals.
It always seems to happen that way. I mean, you remember when Nassib was with the Bucks?
Oh, God.
And he just single-handedly annihilated our team. And I was like, that hurts, but good for him.
Guys get fired up. And guys like Nassib and guys that are on like the defensive line, they have the better chance to really get pumped and make that kind of an impact. When you're kind of a linebacker or even like a receiver, it's such a fine controlled position that you can't just play harder. Yeah, maybe a Sam.
Getting
really
jacked
get
up
it,
and
I don't.
Yeah, you don't want to be a quarterback that's getting riled up. You want to be a running back or a defensive lineman.
I don't want to take us too far off topic, but I just noticed that Green Bay dropped Jalen Smith, the linebacker. I'm thinking to myself, why are people dropping him? And should we, pick him up?
With the injuries, I wouldn't be opposed to it, but I think it's you just have to find out how he fits in. And but you know, we've got, I mean, JOK will be back. We assume pretty soon, but we've got other guys that are banged up on IR and or going to be out for the season that they might just have the space for him. You know, it's at this point you're still competing, and as long as you're not giving up huge future assets, I think you bring in anybody you can to win. I get why some teams don't want to give up a first or second for something, but
You could drop from two teams in a month.
Yeah, I'm a little baffled by that. Wasn't he a really good player?
Someone knows something, and it's
wrong.
Unfortunately not us.
Yeah, I have no clue, but I thought he was a really good linebacker.
We need to find an insider. Okay, let's go on to some leak headlines, and I guess you just opened us up with that one, Chip, is you know, there may be some guys getting dropped right about now as guys come back from IR, or guys that might have been held, and we'll see kind of who might be left on the scrap heap.
Yeah, but I know DeSean Jackson got dropped by the Rams, and they're just like, well, we have Cooper Kupp, so we're good in wide receiver.
They're never
going
to use him. Yeah.
That's our only wide receiver we need, and we're good with Cooper Kupp.
Pretty much. Does Robert Woods still play for that team? Because I feel like
he's been so quiet, but yep. I mean, he's there.
He's a good
with
player.
Van Jefferson, that I haven't seen what his like target share or anything's been, but
all right. Well, we got about a 5-minute sports headline cap here. Let's hit a couple more. The first one I wanted to mention was I saw a little breaking news flash right before we started this. Most everybody listening to this obviously has heard that Jameis Winston tore his ACL and he's going to be out for the season. Phillip Rivers apparently has said that he wouldn't count out hanging down south and playing a second half of the season with the Saints if they come calling. And I don't know where you guys stand on Taysom Hill, but that's a pretty tempting offer given that he could kind of at least move the ball on a probably worse Colts team or worse Colts offense last season. And he's nice and rested.
I think the big problem there is Hill's not even a lock to play this week.
Right. He's out still.
He's still out. So
was that a concussion?
So
hey, he's like, if somebody comes a call in, I might pick up the phone.
The Rivers comment makes me laugh because I have to ask myself, what's going on with his coaching time with his high school? I remember there was some pod I was listening to. I can't remember who, but he was like all excited about taking his coaching job for a high school team. Yeah, what happened? It didn't work out.
He just wants to stay in football. And I think that at that point, you hand it off to the assistant coach and you're like,
you know how many
coach,
college tuitions he has team. To pay for? He has like,
he's got like 32
dozen.
Kids.
Yeah. He's always got to work.
You got to make that money.
I forgot about that.
Next up, Von Miller was traded with the Rams for a 2 and a 3.
Yep.
Where are you guys on that? Because I know a lot of people got excited that the Rams are like apparently all in, but
which is kind of a.
Yeah, I don't think they have
won. When are they?
I don't think Von Miller
not?
Has much left. I mean, did you guys see anything from Von Miller in the Denver game that makes you think he's going to impact that game?
No, but I think motivation in a team that has success also makes you better. So I don't think, you know, you saw 100% of Von Miller's effort in Denver either at these last few years. But I think if you're a rookie right now, you're not expecting to get a Rams offer. I mean, I don't think they have a pick until what?
No,
I wouldn't even go. Yeah, they're not going to even make the team.
If you're
going
to get a trip to LA, sure. Yeah. But like, I'm not wasting.
Yeah, they are playing. They are playing with. They're literally like just in $200,000 credit card debt. just like, meh, we'll figure out.
But I like it because I like it. And here's why. Because the ultimate goal is to win a Super Bowl. Right. It's not to build some contender for 10 years, because I don't care if you're contending for 10 years and never win a Super Bowl. The ultimate goal is to win a Super Bowl. So they're like, look, we're all our chips are in. We might suck for a while after this, but right now we're trying to win with everything we got.
Yeah, and I get the quarterback. It's the right thing. Attitude.
There's
wonder,
too many teams who are just not even – they're not trying. We talk about the Bengals.
All I can think in my head is if you were willing to give up a second and third for a pass rusher, why didn't you do that for a much better one before the season? Because you can get a good pass rusher for a two and a three from a team that's not very good.
That's a good question. Sure. And the one thing is – so while they have no first-round picks forever – and they just lost their second and third.
And
they
third
do have, they do have a comp pick from one of their front office staff or one of their coaches getting hired.
Yeah, is that part of that?
So they're getting plan? they're getting a third there. They're going to get probably another third from Joe Johnson.
I mean, you can get a Sione Takitaki for a third.
They're probably going to end up with, I think I was looking at the list, they could end up with between three and four third-round comp picks. While
I got to tell you, if Johnson is worth a third to them right now after the garbage we had to watch the first half of the season, I'm going to be very upset.
You know the comp pick calc better than I do, and I know it lags, but
yeah,
they
probably will. You're probably right. They'll probably get that, but it's going to make me sick because – he has been, I mean, unless he really turns it around, which good for us if he can, because he's played really well the last 2 weeks compared to the beginning of the season, but he's still like a B minus player that used to be an A minus player last year. So we'll see. Not much player news left besides that. I thought it's a new story, so I don't know if we know a lot, but do you guys get any info on this Henry Ruggs story?
Just sad.
What is a guy really in Las Vegas doing driving drunk? What is a very wealthy man doing driving drunk?
Well, he probably doesn't live on the strip. He's not getting cab rides. But that's, I'm not justifying his driving drunk. I'm just
saying. I mean, it's really sad.
I mean, it's not like the guy lives in Green Bay and you can't get a cab, though. The dude can get an Uber.
Yeah. Green Bay. What do they hand out? Bikes in Green Bay?
It's not like you live in this little town and you're like, well, I'll just jump in my own car. I'm not waiting outside for an Uber. Like he lives in a nice warm place with constant 24-hour drivers
service
time. Come on, man. You just these mistakes, like seeing guys drive drunk, it's not like it's a mistake that tons of people don't make. You just can't make that mistake when you're these guys because you have the means to never make that mistake.
Takes away a lot of the excuses, even though there shouldn't be.
Yeah.
I mean, for anyone, really.
Sad. It's too early to find the details, but man, he might end up in an example for anti-driving.
Well, from everything I've read just before this, the minimums like require jail time. Like he's definitely going to jail.
And he was having a great season.
Whether he should or shouldn't, but it's an unfortunate situation.
Such a like nice young career and such like, I mean, there's no like, I haven't heard anything bad about the guy. It's not like, I don't know. Just it's kind of a sad story to me. And I know this kind of stuff happens all the time, but when it's like so out in the open and you know, it was so avoidable, it's just tough. But yeah, that's a bit of a downer and we'll hear more details as we go. Outside of player news, let's move into Cleveland a little bit. First thing I wanted to mention was Chip's little note here that the Cavs went 3-2 on their road trip, and they did play a handful of good teams. I am actually on the Cavs bandwagon this year because last year I don't think I was very excited about them because I just kind of felt like it was a done deal that they were going to flop. And it was kind of a frustrating team design, but I thought they picked an intriguing player last year. I thought they picked a pretty great player this year. And for the first time in a while, they picked who I would have picked, which, always at least makes you a little bit more invested. And I'm kind of excited to see. They're playing well against not bad teams. And I don't want to get tricked like Chip pulled me in last year with their hot start. And then they ended up exactly where I thought they would end up, flopping towards the bottom.
Well, a lot of people had them at 7-1 right now, and they're 4-4. Evan Mobley looks like the real deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think that the difference between then and now is now I kind of see what the team design is with this young team. And last year I was almost sure sometime during the season they were going to end up trading one of those young guards, and it was going to be like, well, I've been getting invested and now I'm out again. And it didn't happen, and I don't know if Colin Sexton is worth a max deal, which is where he's headed. But at least, like, watching now, there's enough other young pieces that if something happens there, I can stay excited. I don't want to put my investment in something that's just going to fall apart, but it's, I mean, and they look fun. I've been with them when they played Atlanta.
Yeah.
When they played LA, it's pretty,
they're pretty cool, a lot of fun. Well. Yeah. They're a lot of fun to watch. Also, I got to give credit to Jared Allen, who really dominated Charlotte's game last night.
He played really good. And that's exactly what I meant. Like, another guy, like, it was Mobley the night before.
Yeah.
It's Colin Sexton like two games before that. They're really spreading it around.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I'm excited for that Mobley top shot once it comes out.
Mobley looks like he's going to be a fun player, really, right?
Yeah, they actually had, for a lot of the rookies this year, you could actually go out on Twitter and vote for which one of, like, they threw out a couple plays. And you could vote on which one they would pick as their first moment, which is pretty cool considering, like, some of the guys last year, they had their, like, rookie moments, like a rookie card.
Yeah. And what is that?
Now, like, that I've top lost shot? Everyone, that's fine.
I'm going to look that up. Was that a Top Shot Twitter?
Yeah, I'll send it to you. Right. Yeah, I think it may have just ended, but they gave you like, fans the option to pick the moment, because it's funny. Like, some of their stuff's great, but you have some people like LaMelo, who his like I mean, he's doing amazing. He's out there. His first moment is like a nothing assist, and it's like,
snore.
Man, you're getting a guy's like,
that's so silly,
quote unquote, makes, like, rookie card, like his first thing, and it's like, man, you get. They just kind of picked like a boring like assist.
Maybe it was his first like actual stat, like he registered an assist.
They have a couple different. There's a couple different ways that they do it, and it actually is against the Cavs.
He hits he hits some of those Curry-ish long threes every once in a while that should definitely be his top shot.
So LaMelo Ball, his first play, it's an assist against the Cavs. He passes the ball off. A guy takes two dribbles and throws up a three. It's not even technically an assist.
Yeah.
The guy gathers it, takes a step, takes two dribbles, and then hits a bank three.
Yeah, I wonder how, like, they choose that, because
there's like a guy. They have like a guy who goes through some plays, but I was glad to see with the rookies. So I'm ready to grab some Mobley moments when they come out, and there's a couple packs coming out here pretty soon. Couple days. So hopefully his will be in there, and if not, I'll have to snag some on the secondary market.
From the broker himself. You guys, I hope you're taking that advice at home. Start looking for Mobley top shots. I only have two more topics. Okay. And then I got to get running. I'm late, but I'm just dragging it out. It's fine. All right. This is somehow turned out from the most depressing podcast to kind of fun. Yeah. So number one, I got a message from Jim to make sure to mention that his asshole of the week was the entire Cleveland Browns team, and they need to pull their shit together. So Jim got to make his appearance on the podcast this week, and I hope the Browns are listening. Get it together, losers. You're way better than this. And then the final topic, I got a notification today that the Indians, the baseball team formerly known as the Indians, were taking down at Progressive Stadium the giant Indian sign.
Yeah.
And I had to take a step back to realize, is this the beginning of the Guardians era, or are they jumping the gun because they're currently being sued, from what I hear, from a roller derby team already with a
Gladiators.
Are you guys up to date on this hot story?
I don't know much about it.
So excited.
But I hope they get sued.
So apparently what I heard was there's already a roller derby team, a women's roller derby team in Cleveland named the Gladiators. And they are making the claim against them that this team name has already been taken and they are suing for the rights of the team name.
The other thing is too, I mean, they're not that it's that big of a deal, but I mean, for the teams, I mean, marketing and branding and naming and all of that stuff is huge. That was why the whole Washington football team thing was hilarious, that some attorney in the area just like bought up every name, like anything remotely close to what they could want. So they just had like no access to any names.
It's brilliant.
But so Cleveland Guardians, that's great. I'm curious because I assume like all of like the social handles have to be gone. I mean, the Guardians.
Well, if people were smart, they would have taken CLE Guardians, Guardians Baseball,
everything.
Guardians,
like so Guardians,
all of the social media.
Just the normal Guardians belongs to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Ooh, know what?
0% chance.
I gotta take a quick time out. I was mistaken. I'm looking at the story now. This looks like this is not a female team. This is a male roller derby team.
That got less interesting.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Unless I misread the thing I just read, you know what? I don't want to get too much into detail because I'm definitely going to be wrong. But somebody just sent me a little thing and I was looking at it and I was like, is this a female or male team? Is this a mix? I don't know. But I just think that the story was hilarious that somebody even told me at the Browns game, like, I think the Guardians are getting sued already for naming rights. It's like, okay, you better hold on that Indian sign for one more season.
So the actual logo that they use has the Guardian, like, oh my gosh, it's so bad.
The logos are terrible, and we
no can no get into like that anytime, but the roller derby has like the same logo, like the face from the bridge, like with the wings and everything. Like I actually did not see the roller derby team's logo until just now. Like,
are you looking at it? Are they got? Is it a guy's team, a girl's team, or both?
I'm just going through the logos right now, and they're so significantly better than what the team formerly known as the Indians.
Than a baseball were. With a
it
wing.
It does, and I am on their team website. And it does look to be co-ed, if you call adults co-eds. but yes.
Okay. Yeah, I clicked on it, and the story that popped up showed a guy in the Guardians, and I guess he could have been a fan or something. But I was like, wait a second.
No,
I don't know.
There's
I'm looking at the logo now.
There, but
they probably the name. They probably should have just copied the logo because this does look better.
I mean, didn't they kind of?
I think theirs looks better than the Cleveland one, than the baseball.
Oh no,
one.
No! It looks significantly better, but still using the face, the wings on the helmet,
that's what it is.
Some intern just found this page and was like, "I got a great idea."
Like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna get away with this. This will be hilarious. All right, guys, I gotta close it out. I am 10 minutes late to dinner. But good podcast yesterday. That was a fun way to turn my mood around because I watched the highlight reel. Right before I started this, and I was like, I hate the Browns again.
Yeah.
After watching this highlight, this is should have won.
Can we do me a favor? And if we lose next week, can we start a QB tracker and draft analysis?
Okay. Well, if we
worst
lose
possible
next week,
year.
And I'll tell you this: if we lose next week and Baker looks doesn't look as good as this week or better, then we can start talking.
All right.
I'm open for everything at that point, probably. All right, guys.
Just bring on Kenny Pickett.
Okay. I'll catch you guys next week. And I guess let's go Browns Battle of Ohio.
Yeah. As always, good talking to you guys. Take care.
Have a good one, guys.